Linda T. and Jean A. Versus Rice Lake Area School District. Mr. Spencer Resnick.
Thank you, Your Honors, and a warm welcome from Wisconsin to Judge Sykes, no longer Justice. Pleased to make your acquaintance on this panel. My name is Jeff Spitzer Resnick. I am an attorney at the Wisconsin Coalition for Advocacy, and I mention that because we are the federally mandated and state designated protection and advocacy agency for people with disabilities, Linda T. and Jean A. being the parents of one such individual, Will A., the student in this case. The purpose, I think, of oral arguments are, of course, to answer your questions, but also to discuss the policy implications, the outcome of a case after a case has been well briefed, as has the case by both parties in this case. Fortunately, some of the policy concerns have been dealt with well by an amicus brief submitted on behalf of five nonprofit entities: the Council of Parents, Attorneys, and Advocates, the two other protection and advocacy agencies from this circuit, Equip for Equality from Illinois and the Indiana Protection and Advocacy Agency from Indiana, Wisconsin FACETS, the Parent Training and Information Center, and the Wisconsin Coalition of Independent Living Centers. The fundamental problem here, from a policy point of view, if this court chooses to uphold Judge Crabb's decision, is that it will be difficult, if not impossible, to fulfill Congress's purpose in the attorney fee-shifting provisions of the IDEA in making sure that students and their parents have the opportunity to obtain due process through this law. In fact, we call the administrative hearings that was being reviewed for the purpose of attorneys' fees, and it's unique within all administrative hearings, we call them due process hearings. We don't just call them administrative hearings. And why do we do that? Because that is the way, if we go back to the very beginning of the case law in the IDEA, that we fulfill the promise that Congress made to these students, and courts have said over and over and over again that in order to get special education, students and their parents must have opportunities to access due process of law. You see in the exhibits attached to the amicus that in Illinois, the P&A, Equip for Equality, was only able to represent 8.9% of those who requested help from it in special education matters. Our agency has similar circumstances. A nationwide survey found that there were just somewhat over 300 attorneys nationwide to represent parents and children regardless of ability to pay, and only 33 in the three states bounded by the Seventh Circuit. That is a ratio of one attorney to nearly 20,000 students in special education. Now, admittedly, fortunately, they don't all have legal disputes, but it is a fairly sparse, and that's, again, not including who can actually afford to pay. Now, even more important is looking at the Archer Report. Now, no attorney basically means you're going to lose your case. And that's what the Archer Report says. School districts represented 94% of hearings. Parents and kids only represented 44% of hearings. What's the result? When parents are unrepresented, they are five times more likely to lose. Your Honors, I submit that is not due process of law. So what would the result of this case be if Judge Crabb's decision is upheld? If I'm a privately practicing attorney, I'm going to look at a client coming in the door, and I'm going to say, under Judge Crabb's ruling, even if I win the case, I can't get fees. Or I may not get fees, I should say. I should clarify that. I may not get fees. I can't count on that fee-shifting provision. So I'm going to say to my client, you're going to have to pay me by an hourly rate. I cannot possibly even, unless I'm going to do the case pro bono, take this case contingent on obtaining attorney's fees. And even, as in this case, if you win a major issue, you may not be considered a prevailing party.
It sounds to me like you're getting around to arguing that we should get rid of the rule that even if you're a prevailing party, where your relief is de minimis, then you don't recover.
No, I think there is room for de minimis, Your Honor. This case does not fit de minimis, and this court needs to review that on a de novo basis. Number one, Judge Crabb does not articulate a standard for what de minimis is in special education cases. Number two, the Supreme Court case law that she appropriately refers to, which articulated the concept of de minimis, Farrar versus Hobby, is instructive. In Farrar versus Hobby, 10 defendants were sued for a total of $17 million. Farrar's result? A liability verdict against one of those 10 for $1. No one can reasonably argue that that was not a de minimis result. So certainly there is room for de minimis, a finding that attorneys and their clients are not entitled to fees in a de minimis situation.
What legal standard do you extrapolate from the Supreme Court case law on how to evaluate what is de minimis relief?
Well, unfortunately for this panel and for the parties, there is not a case on all fours in under the IDEA. So, frankly, and in fact, I think if we look at the specific provision, I think counsel for the appellees correctly stated, arguably under this particular section, it may be a case of first impression. So that leaves us, and I think that's why the public policy that I started out with is very important. But I think the way the court should look at it is looking to the language of what actually even Judge Crabb said, but also the rubric around how you define whether or not there's a prevailing party. Was there a substantial victory? Was there a substantial effect? Now, in this case, there were three issues decided first defined by the ALJ and ultimately decided by the ALJ. Those issues are not in dispute. Neither party appealed them. There is no dispute that the plaintiffs won two of the three issues and that the plaintiffs are not seeking fees regarding the issue that they lost, the consultation issue. Now, as to the first issue, I would think that one of the ways that this court and courts can easily analyze this is what is the fundamental purpose of the statute? The purpose of this statute is to, A, afford students with disabilities a free, appropriate public education, and, B, to do so in the least restrictive environment. Now, that was the number one issue that the ALJ defined. It's in her decision. The parties agreed upon it. And the plaintiffs won. Period. Now, Judge Crabb apparently accepts some rather contorted logic of the appellees in deciding that on an issue of such major importance that the plaintiffs won, they did not prevail on that issue because we spent a lot of time talking about the segregated school, Red Cedar Hall. I mean, appellees actually spent time counting lines in the brief, in the transcript of a 3-day hearing. Now, frankly, that may be, depending on the outcome of this case, a reason to decide how much plaintiffs should be paid. Is it 2/3 because we won 2 out of 3? Is it based on the amount of time spent at the hearing? If we got into that, frankly, there would be issues about how much cross-examination was spent by defense counsel and how much redirect. I see that the white light is on. I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
All right. Ms. Curry.
Good morning. If it please the court, my name is Joanne Harmon Curry, and I represent the appellee, the Rice Lake School District. The district court's judgment should be affirmed for the following three reasons. I'll begin my discussion by asserting that the appellant, Linda T., waived her rights to argue before this court that the IDEA statutory provisions on the fee-shifting provision in the statute was changed in the 1997 amendments such that the district court should have considered those changes. In making that argument before this court, the appellant Linda T. provides a policy argument in addition to a statutory construction argument. The appellant Linda T. did not present this argument to the district court. or did so in a very perfunctory fashion. And the slight mention of the IDEA amendment that the appellant Linda T. made to the district court was in support of their argument that they were the prevailing party at the administrative hearing. They provided no argument with regard to the 1997 IDEA amendments or the purpose of the IDEA in support of their counter-argument that their results from the administrative hearing were not de minimis. And this court has long refused to consider new arguments as grounds for reversal of the district court when they're presented to this court new. And I would argue that this is not an exceptional case in which the court should now consider that argument. However, if the court would decide to review the appellant Linda T's argument with regard to the 1997 IDEA amendments, then my second point is that the appellant Linda T has misread the 1997 IDEA amendments. In those amendments, Congress added to the prohibitions against attorney fee awards by inserting a provision which is at issue here related to whether or not attorneys participating in IEP team meetings may get attorney fees. The prohibition was against an award narrowing the discretion of the court to award attorney fees when an attorney attends an IEP meeting that is either prior to the filing of a complaint, or if an IEP meeting is conducted prior to the administrative hearing. This court's decision in TD versus LaGrange, in which Judge Kaney sat, provides useful analysis which parallels the argument that the appellant Linda T is making in this case. The plaintiffs in TD argued that the IDEA fee shifting statute should be interpreted differently than the other civil rights fee shifting statutes. This court held that they must begin with a presumption that the IDEA is to be interpreted in a manner that's similar to the other fee shifting statutes. And other court precedents from this court certainly support that. The court in TD went on to analyze the history and the text of the IDEA fee shifting provision. And although that case, of course, was this circuit's analysis of whether the Supreme Court decision in Buchanan Board and Care Home and West Virginia Department of Human Services, in which the Supreme Court rejected the catalyst theory as a basis for awarding attorney fees, although that's a different issue than before the court today, the discussion of the history of the IDEA and the text of the IDEA is relevant, I believe, to the case before the court today. The appellant Linda T has failed to provide any argument that there is explicit language in the provisions of the IDEA amendments that prohibit or limit this court's discretion to, number one, determine prevailing party status, and number two, to determine whether or not the success of the appellant Linda T at the administrative hearing was sufficient enough to result in an award of attorney fees. I'd like to correct the appellant Linda T's assertion that they prevailed on 2 out of 3 issues at the district court level. First of all, appellant Linda T has stated in their brief to this court that they are not contesting, and indeed they did not appeal, the decision of the district court with regard to prevailing party status. The district court clearly held that the appellant Linda T. prevailed on only one out of three issues. The district court denied appellant Linda T. prevailing party status on the primary issue in the case, which was the whether or not William A. would receive instructional services in the least restrictive environment if the Rice Lakes School District proceeded to place him in the Red Cedar Hall segregated facility for half days. The district court clearly held that appellant Linda T. did not prevail on the least restrictive argument. Also, the district court clearly held that appellant Linda T. did not prevail on a third argument in which Linda T. attempted to have the hearing officer order the school district to hire an independent consultant to come in and train the personnel of the district. The administrative law judge found that the personnel of the Rice Lake School District were indeed trained in how to educate children with autism, and found, in even ruling on the second issue, which is the issue on which appellant Linda T. prevailed, that is, the court ordered Rice Lake to convene an IEP team so that in the instructional sections of the IEP, the team would state with greater specificity the frequency and amount of training that the Rice Lake School District staff would be given. The administrative law judge found that because the Rice Lake School District staff were trained and educated on serving children with autism, that it would defer to the expertise of the educators when they reconvene the IEP team, and the team would decide what frequency and amount of training should occur. So this appellant Linda T's results from this three-day administrative hearing were indeed de minimis. It is what Judge Evans, in a dissent in the Evanston Community Consolidated School District versus Michael M., stated was fine-tuning of the IEP, which he encouraged was not to be reinforced. The district court did properly rely on this court's decision in Monticello School District number 25 versus George L., in which Judge Flaum sat, and that case is very instructive. It clearly states that this court's review of a district court's decision with regard to both prevailing party and an award of fees is an abuse of discretion standard of review. The amendments to the IDEA did not change the district court's discretion to decide whether or not to award fees. In George L., it's also instructive because the court explains its reliance on the U.S. Supreme Court cases in Hensley versus Eckhart and Ferrer versus Hobby, in which the court relies on not only the majority opinion in Ferrer, but also Justice O'Connor's concurrence, in which she further explains that, number one, the degree of success is not a consideration when determining prevailing party status. However, as a matter of law, which the appellant Linda T. improperly relies on to encourage this court to change its precedents, in Jodlowski versus Valley View Community School District, this court held that, I'm sorry, I see my time is up.
You may conclude your thought.
Okay, thank you. In Jodlowski versus Valley View Community School District, this court held that when a district court determines that the plaintiff's results at the administrative hearing are de minimis, as a matter of law, they may not award any fees. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carey. Mr. Spitzer Resnick.
Since in the briefs as well as today, Ms. Curry raised, frankly, ad nauseum the waiver argument, I feel compelled in rebuttal to respond
to it. Don't spend a lot of time. You don't have a lot of time. So
all right, then I won't.
I don't want to waste your time, and you don't need to spend time.
I will take the learned court's advice on that. I'll just go down, then, the other issues that she raised. As to the 97 amendment, I think it's important to understand that no court has reviewed this, okay? TD didn't review it because TD looked at the Buchanan issue. If there's a settlement, do we follow Buchanan or not? Ultimately, we decided to follow Buchanan. This isn't a Buchanan case.
But did the amendments speak to any change in the attorney's fees, Mr. Smith?
Yes, specifically.
What were those things?
Specifically, the amendment said when you're a prevailing party and you're applying for fees, you cannot get fees for meeting in an IEP meeting except if you have done so pursuant to a court or administrative order. Now, the reason we raise this is twofold. Number one, we believe that the district court unduly relied on the ALJ's remand back, which, frankly, is the way virtually all of these due process hearings go. This is what I find. The kid wasn't in the least restrictive environment. You didn't specify the amount of training. Back to the IEP team. ALJ, I'm not the expert. IEP team, which, by the way, is not deferential to the educators. The parent is a key and critical member of that IEP team, represented by counsel in this particular instance, not in all instances. So that's the key issue. Now, we have never said that, therefore, mandates attorney's fees. But in the context of a situation where Judge Crabb has taken that and said, because essentially what you got is a remand to the IEP team, you're not entitled to fees, we point out this amendment that she simply ignored. That is entitled to de novo review.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks to all counsel. And the case will be taken under advisement. Court will stand in recess.